session number 24611, reel 6.
Mr. Campbell, reel 6. Now, what happened next in Germany? I mean, how long did you stay with the 3rd Battalion?
Well, the tanks were taken away from us at the end of that year. And when we returned to Cologne, we did garrison duties in Cologne. We guarded the prisoners in Cologne jail for a while.
Do you remember much about that?
Not really. There was one night I was on guard at the back of the jail. It was very, very cold. We had a fire burning. And I heard this noise as if someone was sawing metal. So I contacted the sergeant in charge, and he listened and he heard it. So we went into the jail and opened all the prison doors. I saw one or two of the high-ranking German officers that were held prisoner. We even went into the condemned padded cell, but never came to the bottom of it as to what had happened. We lifted the mattresses they were lying on, searching for files, etc., but found nothing. So that was that.
Bit of a false alarm in
some way. It was a false alarm, as far as we knew. Although both of us heard this noise, we still didn't know what it was.
And what happened next?
Well, eventually they broke, I can't remember how long we were in Cologne, but they broke the battalion up. Some of us went to our 2nd battalion, who were in Berlin. Others again.
That's the 2nd battalion.
That's the 2nd battalion, Scots Guards.
Uh-huh. And you went with them?
No. I went to the 1st battalion, who were in Italy, in Trieste.
And what were your impressions on joining them? Well, do you know when you joined them? Would that be January or 46? Or was it 1946?
It would be 45.
Where did you spend Christmas?
It would be 46, it would be. It would be the beginning of 46, it would be, probably.
And what do you remember of that period?
Well, we were up where they keep, we were billeted on a farm outside Trieste, where they keep the Lipizzana horses, where they are bred. We were on that farm. There's no horses there, they were all away, but that's the farm we were on. And we were stopping the Yugoslavs. They were wanting to take Trieste and make it their main seaport. It belonged to Italy, so the British troops were there to stop the Yugoslavs from taking Trieste. There was riots in Trieste, but we were not allowed to do anything. We were instructed when there was a riot took place to go into a cafe and do nothing.
Now, why was that? Can you explain that?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't know. We were there to stop them. There was riots there. They just didn't want us to interfere between the Italian government and the Yugoslav government. They used to march down the main thoroughfare, what they called the Via Settembre in Trieste, chanting and banner waving, red flag waving, because they were communists, and we were just told to go into cafes out the road.
So, anything happened while you were there? I don't know.
Well, we moved from there down to Pula, a place called Pula. Actually, it was in Yugoslavia. We had to go through Yugoslavia. We weren't allowed to carry any weapons with us. They were in a separate truck. We were only allowed to stop in a certain place in Yugoslavia for the toilet. Every bridge, Bailey Bridge, every village we went through, there was nothing else but Yugoslavs with machine guns, armed machine guns. When we got to Pula, we were billeted there for a while. That used to be a massive submarine base. The submarine pens were still there.
And that's actually in Yugoslavia?
In Pula itself, uh-huh. It's a seaport.
And what were you doing there?
We were just guarding the place. We didn't want them to capture the submarine bases or nothing like that. More or less to keep the peace. There was caves there, massive caves. Hotels are now built on top of them, but they at that time were filled with the guns, ammunition, torpedoes for the submarines which were in the pens and things like that. So we were guarding them so that the communists couldn't get hold of them.
Anything happen?
No, very, very quiet.
And how long were you there for? Roughly.
Roughly, I would say about six, 7 months.
Till about July then?
Yeah. And then we went back again to Lipica, or Lipizzano, as the Italians call it, and I got a leave. It was a 7-day leave, but the transport back to Blighty was smashed to bits, and it took too long because most of my 7 days would have been wasted in travelling. I would have had about a day, maybe 2 days at the most, in Scotland, and then I'd have to come back. So I decided to take a leave in a place called Cortina di Ampezzo, in the Dolomites, the Italian Dolomites. Now, it was the middle of winter, and I used to go ice skating when I was in Edinburgh, before I went into the forces. So I went ice skating there. We got skates and were ice skating on what was the tennis court in the summer, but an ice rink in the winter of the Palace Hotel. We were billeted in this beautiful big hotel on the main road. So I had done a bit of skiing. Not much, but a bit. So they asked if we wanted to go on the ski run. I said yes. So we were taken up to the top of the mountain, and there was an Italian dressed in a bear suit and a photographer beside him, and you could get your picture taken with this bear. So I got my picture taken. This English lad turns to me and he said, "Jock," he said, "that's very unlucky. You shouldn't do that." I said, "I don't believe in luck." I went down the hill. I was halfway down the hill. An Italian went right in front of me. I went to brake hard, went into a skid, went down and hit this tree right down the left side and broke my femur. So I ended up in hospital for the rest of my army days, being shifted from one hospital to another. I was taken down the rest of the mountain. The small Italian came down with a bag marked with a Red Cross, cut my trousers open, gave me an injection of morphine, and then I saw the sledge coming down, put me on the sledge, took me down to the road where there was an ambulance waiting, an American one, and took me to this hospital. It was a field hospital, where they put the bone back in place. I was conscious the whole time, although they'd given me morphine, it didn't work. And the doctor said you'd have to give me a local anaesthetic into the leg. I remember distinctly there were two sisters, two army sisters, two medical orderlies, and the two sisters had me under the arm. The medical orderlies had my feet. There was another sister making up plaster of Paris in a bowl, and the doctor standing at my side. He said, "You won't feel this," he said, "because you've had a very strong injection." And he shouts, "Right." The two orderlies pulled my legs, the sisters pulled my shoulder, and all I heard was click, the bone being put back in place. And then the sister came with the plaster of Paris. It wasn't plaster bandages, it was the actual plaster of Paris then, right over my leg. So I was there for a week, and I was transferred to a big hospital in Mestre, M-E-S-T-R-E in Italy. I wrote home, told my mother I'd had an accident, that I was all right, not to worry. So I got a letter from her eventually, asking if I was coming home. So I asked the sergeant, who used to come round daily, for a transfer home. He's put in for it, and eventually, after about 6 weeks, I was transferred from Mestre by hospital train to Hamburg. I went into a German hospital in Hamburg, stayed there for about 3 weeks, then was shifted onto a hospital ship called the L-Nil, which used to belong, as far as I found out, to King Farouk. The British had taken it and made it into a hospital ship. It used to be his yacht. So we sailed from there. We were in bunks there. We sailed from there, and all I could hear was the ice being cut in the canal. And we landed at Southampton. I was taken and put into a hospital train at Southampton and taken up to Southport Convalescent Home.
Now this would be when? December 46 or later?
This must have been... It must have been the winter of 46.
46, 47. Before Christmas, then?
It was before Christmas. And I was put into a convalescent home. I wrote and told my mother I was at Southport. And on the April holiday of that year, my mother and father came down to see me in the hospital. And it was more like a comedy, that hospital, because there was no rules and regulations, nobody bothered. It was so easy going that it didn't feel like a hospital at all. The sister who attended to me, much to my surprise, was a German girl. Her name was Lila Orbach, and she was a German Jewess whose father was a doctor, or had been a doctor, but was killed by the Nazis, and she had managed to escape to England. I got very friendly with her, as she spoke beautiful English, asked her what hospital she had come into, and she said she'd come up to Southport, and the first patients that she had treated were German prisoners of war. I asked how she felt treating Nazis, and she said she hated it, but as she was a nurse or a sister, she just did her duty, but asked to be transferred to a British ward. She eventually told me that she was emigrating to America. And that was the last I heard of her.
Now, how was your leg doing? It's a bad thing to break, your femur.
It was right up at the very top. And I eventually asked for a transfer home, and they gave me a choice of the Princess Margaret Rose or the hospital down at Eden Hall, which I knew was a military hospital, but I knew that Princess Margaret Rose wasn't. So I plumped for the Princess Margaret Rose Hospital, knowing it was nearer my home in Musselburgh. To leave the hospital in the Southport, I was walking with two sticks. I was given the pass to come to Edinburgh. I was told I had to take the train to Liverpool, change at Liverpool, go to Lime Street and catch a train to Edinburgh. Never having been in Liverpool in my life, I didn't know where to go. So I spoke to two girls and they said they were going to Lime Street station. They took my pack and I walked with them. They put me on the train, wished me all the best, and I came home to the Princess Margaret Rose Hospital walking on two sticks. It took me over a year before I actually got well enough to walk without a stick.
Still, all the time in Princess Rose Hospital?
All the time.
So this was into 48, would it be?
40, there was the middle of 47. Because I was demobbed on the August of 47. Oh. I was discharged. I had to
so
go.
You were still limping then, were you?
I was still limping. I had to go all the way down to Aldershot, as that's where the guards were demobilised from. Even though the barracks in Edinburgh was a demobilisation centre, they sent me all the way down to Aldershot. So I went down there. I had a medical chit excusing me from all duties. I was walking, but I was limping. And I sat in the barrack room twiddling my thumbs. I went to the office and asked them when I was going to be sent home and discharged. There are no trucks going to Aldershot, to the centre. I eventually, after about a month, spoke to this fellow who was saying, I'm getting discharged tomorrow, I'm getting discharged tomorrow. I asked him how he was getting to the discharge centre, and he said he was going by 1500 weight at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. So I went down to the office and told them there is a truck going tomorrow at 8 o'clock. I said, I don't consider myself a soldier any longer. I says, I want on that truck and I want to go home and be discharged. So they put my name down and I went with this fellow. Got my civvies, took the army uniform, got my civvies and made my way back home again.
And what about your return to civilian life? I mean, what was your career to be?
Well, I didn't know what to do. I was walking with the limp. Sometimes I had to use the stick, my leg used to kill me, and I thought, well, what can I do? I can't go back to the police. Well, I could go back to the police, but at that time there was the law stated that the firm had to take you back for 6 months of a minimum, and then they could do what they liked with you. They could give you your books, do what they liked with you. And I thought, well, I can't walk properly, so what's the point in going back to the police? They told me I would never be able to walk properly again. They actually gave me a caliper and boots, which I refused to wear. I was determined I was going to walk without a caliper. However, I got this fellow that worked in the warehouse where I first got my job when I left school. Asked him if he would speak to the manager again and tell him my situation, which he did. They sent for me and I went up and he gave me a job and he said, look, you can stay as long as you wish. If you find another job, a better job, don't worry, just tell me and it'll be all right. So I got this job.
This is, again, as a clerical job?
This was in the warehouse. I was taking stock, just writing things, sitting down and writing stocks and that. And then I saw a job in the paper, an office job, and I thought, well, that'll do me. I'm sitting most of the time. And I wrote after it, and here it was for a messenger's job. So I wrote explaining to them what had happened to me, and that although I was walking, I was limping. However, much to my astonishment, they sent for me, and I got the job. I started off as an indoor messenger, just delivering stuff to the departments, which was quite easy. And then there was a vacancy dropped up in one of the departments. So I applied for it, and they said, have you got any clerical experience? I said, yes. I said, I finished up in the army before my accident as a company clerk. Oh, that's just what we're looking for. So I got the job as an assurance clerk, and I stayed there right until the day I retired.
Did your leg cause you any real damage? I mean,
No, it's all right now. Perfectly fit. Perfectly fit. I actually asked the doctor if I could go back to ice skating again, because all of my friends used to go to the ice skating, and I used to go and I used to sit watching them and think, oh God, I wish I could go back to skating again. And he asked me if I could skate. I said, yes. Do you speed skate? Yes. Well, I'll let you go back on one condition, that you do not speed skate, because, he said, if you break that bone again, he says, your leg really will be short. It's actually half an inch shorter than my right leg, although you don't notice it. You may notice a slight sway if you're walking up my back, but no more. You think, people have asked me, was I in the Navy? I said, no, I had a broken leg. And that's all. So I went back, and I was very, very careful on the ice skates, took it careful. But they said it would strengthen the muscle in the leg, which it did.
So effectively, your leg's all right now?
Leg's okay.
There's
now.
No disability pension or anything?
No disability pension.
Now, what about any mental effects, of good or bad, of your war service? Did it do you any good or any bad, you know, as an experience, do you think?
Not really. It was part of my life that, to be honest with you, I don't think I would like to have missed it. I had to do it. I did it to the best of my ability. And although I saw some horrible sights, I was quite happy that I had gone there, seen it, done it, and actually came through unscathed.
Thank you very much.